And welcome to Blind Like Me for another week. Our guest today is Dale Campbell, and I don't think that introduction got on the first of the CD, so there it is. Here's Dale and me.
Oh, y'all.
And here we are. Welcome to Blind Like Me. I don't know what number this will be, but it doesn't really make any difference. Our guest is what have you on lately, sir?
Yeah, I've been like Savoie Fair. I've been everywhere.
Well, you've been everywhere, and if I count this, this is the 17th, and on the 19th and 20th, we're going to run the cooking shows that we did last year that they never ran. I don't remember. It was only you and me, wasn't it? It was just us.
Yeah, it was, and that was an all-day effort. We did the whole meal. We would, you know, call each other back and forth as the dinner progressed, but I tell you what, it came out delicious.
You put the turkey in or something, and we took a break, or we did some.
Right, we would take breaks as the day went on after we'd put the turkey in and come back and check it, but we ended up doing the turkey and, gee whiz, several side dishes and two or three pies and a bunch of stuffings and.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to go back and listen, because I remember doing it, but it's been a year. I can't remember what I did yesterday, you know.
I was just thinking that, too. I wrote a little spot for it to send to the different lists and the cooking list and everything like that to announce it. And, I had to look back and refresh, too. I totally forgot about that we did the stuffings and everything else, but it was a huge, success.
We might someday think about putting all the Cooking in the Dark shows on one CD and offering them to your Cooking in the Dark for a $10 contribution to the Mouse Hole Scholarship or something.
I think that would be fantastic. Yeah, the cookbooks that we've got together are selling pretty well for that, going to the scholarship.
Yeah.
It's getting about time to start tallying everything up after the holiday sales at Blind Mice, see what we'll have available for the kids this year for scholarships.
And then after the first of the year, people start submitting essays again, right?
Right. We'll put the subject back up on the website at blindmicemart.com for all the high school visually impaired kids that are going to be going to college, and also for sighted students that have visually impaired parents.
Yeah, we take care.
And we're the only scholarship that offers scholarships to sighted kids of visually impaired parents specifically. Now, of course, sighted students can apply. There's a lot of scholarships that everybody can apply for.
Oh yeah.
But we're the only foundation, or whatever you want to call us, offering a scholarship offer that makes the scholarships available to both visually impaired students and also sighted students with visually impaired parents.
All right, we'll get into that after the first of the year and have us some winners. Let's talk about Dale Campbell. We've had you on all kinds of shows, Blind Like Me's and Blind Handyman's, and you've become a part of our lives and our little organization. You, how long you've been blind? What, 10 years?
It's 9 years and just about a month. It was the 29th of October when this happened back in 1995.
And a day you will never forget.
A day I will never forget. Now, we celebrate it every year now. We celebrate it as Happy Alive Day. Because I tell you, we had gone up into town here in Houston to watch a live band play, and we were coming back. It was about 10 o'clock at night, just coming down the freeway. And there was somebody driving very erratically, probably drunk. And it's wild for me to say that, as many times as in the past I've come home and, you forget where you park your car at. But in this case, his car was speeding down the freeway and whipped over into our lane, and the driver of our car swerved to avoid hitting him, and when he did, he lost control of the car.
And went into the retaining wall.
We were in a convertible, and it was pretty scary there for a minute, although I don't remember much of it. I just remember the car being sideways going down the freeway, and it never really entered my mind until after the wreck. If that car would have flipped, all four of us in that car would have been dead.
Would have killed every one of you, no question.
It would have killed every one of us. But as it was, the car was sideways. All of a sudden, the rear wheels got traction and just like a slingshot flung us right into a retaining wall, of which case I got thrown out of the back seat into the window frame, and it totally crushed my face.
Have you?
You know, after it happened, I remember sitting up on the side of the road and touching my face and thinking to myself, man, you're messed up. And I saw this bright red light in front of me, and I have no idea what it was. But at that point, I didn't know it, but I was blind. I mean, my eyes had suffered the impact. You know, it blew my left eye completely out, blew the retina off the back of my right eye, and totally crushed my face from my eyebrows to my mustache. And I remember sitting up and thinking, I need to get back to that car and help my friend. And then a voice, I have no idea where it came from, who it was, or what it was. I've got several assumptions and several ideas, but a voice asked me, do you want to live or die? And immediately I said, yes, I want to live.
Really?
And I felt a hand on the back of my neck and a hand on the small of my back, and I got laid down in a fetal position, and as soon as I got touched, I just had this perfect feeling of utopia.
Really?
Like everything was going to be fine. And next thing I know, it's like 8 days later, and I've come out of surgery, and I remember laying in this, you know, kind of coming to and feeling my hair. And I've got pretty thick hair, but I felt what it was sutures, where they had actually scalped me and gone in and, you know, used some of my skull to rebuild my face with, and then sutured and stapled my hair back down on my scalp. But I felt all these stitches sticking out, and the first thing I thought was, man, what the hell did y'all do to my hair? Pretty weird. And then it was like, oh, crap, why can't I see? You know, and, hey, why is my mom? Why is my stepfather? Why is everybody, my brother? I could hear their voices all around my bed. And at this time, everybody lived in Kansas City, and I'm down here in Houston. So that's when two and two begin to equal four again, and I started putting the pieces back together.
Speaking of your mom, before I forget, how is she better? Is she?
Yeah,
she was
fine. Turned out the whole big scare was, for those of y'all that don't know, my mom was just in the hospital recently after helping us on the Cooking in the Dark live broadcast a couple weekends ago. And it turns out it was just a hemorrhage that clotted and turned into a little lump. So they said with some medication and time, it'll just slowly start to deteriorate and go away.
And I would imagine she's just a happy woman right now.
Yes. Very relieved.
I would imagine.
And actually, I mean, it got to the point where they did a bunch of blood tests and, you know, urinalysis and CAT scans and MRIs and all of this. And it got to the point where they'd ruled out all the bad stuff. They'd ruled out all types of cancer and leukemia and this, that, and the other. And it was more of a question of just what is it? So basically, she was just waiting around the hospital for 3 days to get a phone call from them once they got results of the biopsy. And anyway, yeah, I gave her a little vacation, a little time off.
That's good. That's good. Tell her.
Happy, very relieved, and very glad to be back at home in her own bed.
Tell her we're thinking about her and whether we're concerned, and come see us when she can. She's just
a
neat lady.
What
was Dale like before the accident? I don't know you real well. We partied together, had a few drinks together, visited, done some shows. But I get the feeling that Dale Campbell was a rounder, a swinger, a party animal before this accident. Am I right?
I was I didn't let any grass grow under my feet, let's put it that way. I mean, for instance, when I was in college, I worked at Sears full-time, selling appliances there. I took 15 hours of classes. I bowled on a league two nights a week. I carried about a 212, 215 average. So I was a professional bowler. I played golf a couple times a week. I played softball two nights a week. You know, I was an A-class, open-class softball player. I got paid to play in other tournaments around the country at times. Golf, I was about a 6 handicap golfer, which meant I shot usually right around 80. You know, par on golf is 72.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say, I guess I was growing up and maturing. Yeah, my younger days when I was in my 20s, it was like, what bar are we going to tonight? Where are we going? What's going on? I mean, it was nothing for us to grab a couple kegs of beer and call a bunch of people up, grab a bunch of firewood and go down to the beach in Galveston and have an all-night beach party or rent a beach house and hang out. Or every year on Halloween, I threw a huge Halloween party. I mean, to the point where we would have 8 kegs of beer and probably 15 gallons of jungle juice and Jell-O shots and all kinds of stuff going on. And it was nothing to have 300 or 400 people at these parties, all in costume, too, which was really fun.
So you were living life?
Living life large. I had changed jobs. I had just gone to work for Prime Cable, a cable company here in Houston, to where I had basically about 29 apartment complexes I was responsible for, and that was hooking people up, disconnecting, selling, all of that, a very lucrative total commission job, and it was wonderful.
Well, those of you who don't know Dale, he's a big, good-looking guy. What are you, 6'1"?
About 6'4".
Big, tall fellow, good physique, built up nicely. All the women seem to think that he's a good-looking man. So sales was right up your alley. I mean, you had
great. I love sales. I love talking to people. And that's one thing, with even with Blind My Smart now, I love hearing from people and talking to customers.
Yeah.
And talking to everybody all over the country, because you do meet some very interesting and very good folks.
And that's kind of what you do all day now, is talk to people.
Yeah, talk to different people, yeah. Try to find us some good deals, good bargains. I mean, one deal we've got going on, we just recently heard about a new talking bathroom scale.
Yeah.
That was for $49. And I'm hot on tracking that down for everybody, so we can get a hold of those and maybe even get it at a little better price than the $50. But it's just filling my days and working to, I tell you, after the wreck and stuff, I had a lot of questions, Phil. Why did it happen to me?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. You were living life. You were living life large, having a big time, and all of a sudden, that was jerked away from you. That was taken.
Yeah.
Bam.
I mean, we were in the process of getting ready to be transferred to Las Vegas to introduce our sales program to the cable company in Las Vegas. And I was totally ecstatic about that. That was a part of the country that I just was wanting to go to. Not so much Vegas for the gambling, but Vegas because of its locality. I mean, L.A. was 4.5 hours away by car. Frisco was 8 hours away. Just being out in the desert, that was something I always wanted to do, was just be out in the desert at night sometime, just to see all the stars, to check it all out. And I was really, really looking forward to that. And then all of a sudden, bam. You know, life says, hey, you're turning this way, and we're not turning slowly. It's happening right now. You know, but my doctors were fabulous, and I still give them all the credit, because they, from day one, they told me, look, you're going to be blind. We've done everything we can do. Our main goal is now to get you put back together and get you home. I mean, they totally had to reconstruct my face. They did 22 hours of continuous surgery on me. Two teams of 12 doctors working in two-hour shifts that rebuilt my face. And for that dedication and stuff, I just can't put in words how much I appreciate that, or how much, how I felt. When they came in my room and I was finally conscious and knew what was going on, I just put my hands together and, thanked them. I could barely speak, but I thanked them.
But
I had a trach in, and I was messed up.
There is no way that couldn't happen to anybody, especially a 29, 30-year-old. You were 30 years old, about,
yeah,
30 when this
years
happened.
Old.
There's no way that you wouldn't, when you became conscious and realized that everything you loved practically had been taken away from you, to go, why me?
Exactly.
There's no way.
Exactly, the anger that followed. And I guess, the stages of depression. The first, I got out of the hospital. I mean, this happened October the 29th. And I told my doctor that by Thanksgiving, which was, I think, the 27th of November that year, I was going to be out of the hospital and home. And he's like, there's no way. And, I sum it up. You can call it whatever you want to call it. But I used every bit of energy I could from people that walked in the room. Everything I did, I concentrated on healing myself and getting the heck out of that hospital. Because, this is it. It's a gravity issue for me. I mean, that's the way I looked at it. This is it. I'm blind. All the whining, complaining, panty waste, whatever you want to call it, it's not going to do any good. It's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
What I needed at that time was to get out of that hospital and start this new life, start this new challenge, start figuring out what in the heck am I going to do? Where am I going from here? And then you think about everything else. Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, you had one version of life, and all of a sudden that's completely gone.
Yeah.
And then you have it in your memory. I mean, after the accident, I went out and played golf. I went bowling. The first ball I threw when I went bowling was a strike. And I'll tell you and everybody listening, that was the scariest 4 steps I ever took in my life, standing on that approach. And I've done this. I couldn't tell you how many miles I've walked, how many games I've bowled. And I knew it. I mean, it's just like getting up and walking to the bathroom and back. You know where you're at. You know how to do it. But it's just that blind faith, excuse the pun, but that's what it was. And I laid that ball down and, boom, got a strike. And there were people all over the bowling alley that were cheering. I mean, everybody came up to watch me. And it's been a case. I guess that should have been the first sign of that. Maybe I was picked for this to be a little bit of a beacon, be a little bit of a leader. To I don't know. I just don't know. You know, I still don't know. But I know I held a cane in my hand, made for a toddler, and it broke my heart.
Well, there had to be a period of you couldn't, even if you'd been an older person, but there had to be a good period of depression and maybe considering suicide and thinking, hell, I can't do this.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm a wuss. I couldn't kill myself, you know. But there were days when I woke up, for many months, that I woke up just angry that I was awake, angry that I woke back up, angry that I didn't die. Maybe I had picked the wrong choice when I got asked, do you want to live or die? And I've gone on many, many spiritual encounters, from going out to Bandera, Texas, and hanging out with people in tents and, you know, under skins, and doing doing different ceremonies out there. Gone on a different spiritual course and looked into almost what I would call white magic, if you will. You know, and of course the God issue, and the read a lot of books on spirituality, just trying to find a basis or a balance or an explanation of why me, why was I once spared, why am I here now? And I still haven't got the answer. Time, it's just time. I mean, maybe, you know, 20 years from now, looking back, I'll understand, oh, that's why this happened.
But you do eventually come to the realization that there is no point in being too concerned about something you can't change.
Exactly. I mean, that was, you know, that was something that I had learned even back in the days of college and working at Sears. If it's a gravity issue, if it's set, what can you do about it?
Nothing.
And in this case, what can you do about this blindness? There's not a doggone thing that I could do to make myself see again, except, you know, physically see, use my eyes to see with. You know, what I had to do was to learn. I had to learn how to become a blind person. And that was a hell of a process. And to get there, the first stage was going through the depression, getting through the anger, getting through the woe is me, getting through all the stages of the depression. And I can remember taking a sledgehammer out in my back barn, you know, because I lived out in the country on a couple acres of land. I had a barn in the back, and I had an old 68 Charger sitting out there. It was beat to heck. It was in bad shape. But I'd take a sledgehammer out there and just physically pound on that car until I could no longer pick that sledgehammer up. Then I would just drop to my knees and cry.
Attempting to vent that anger.
Just to vent that frustration and anger.
Yeah.
And I tell you, there's nothing like knowing how to fry bacon and not being able to do it.
You know,
I've told you this story before.
Yeah.
I burnt my dang house down trying to fry bacon. That just shows my stubbornness, but I was determined to do it. I feel like, I don't know if many of y'all have seen that or stayed, you know, abreast of the Star Trek movies that have been coming out, the four or five of them that are there, but it is a the one where Spock dies, and then he gets shot to this Genesis planet, and he gets reborn, and basically he grows back up. Really feel that is what happened to me. I had to relearn everything and begin growing again. I had to learn how to cook again. I had to learn how to go to the bathroom again. I had to learn how to dress myself. You know, you've got to find strategies on how to keep your clothes organized and this and that, and it's just a heck of a thing to do, to jump into and have to rechange and rethink and start learning and basically learning how to do everything anew. But here I am, and I did it.
Yes, sir, you did.
No regrets. I look at my life now, and it's a much simpler life. Very, very much so slowed down. But I still enjoy a lot of stuff that I used to enjoy.
Let's take a little break, and we want to come back and talk about how you finally got yourself to the place you are now, to the adjustment. Back in a minute. Dale Campbell is our guest. More of Blind Like Me in just a sec. Hang on.
Here here in the cold country, Rochester, Minnesota. I'd love to move
Love
to a warmer
is
place,
Blind,
but, you know,
the audio magazine
you know
for singles.
Anyway, I'm around 32 years old, give or take a couple of years, and never been married. Oh, come close once or twice, but things just didn't work out.
If you'd like more information about this exciting new magazine, phone toll-free 1-877-222-0679. That's 1-877-222-0679. Or you can receive the same information as an email. Our address is loveisblind, all one word, at blindlikeme.com. That's loveisblind at blindlikeme.com. Blind Science. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Science, here's Tim Cummings.
Have you ever wanted to learn how to play the guitar or the piano but were nervous because you didn't know Braille music? Well, finally, here's your answer. There's a website you can go to where you can purchase a whole series of audio cassettes or CDs that will teach you how to play the guitar or piano all by ear. You can even hear demos of some of the courses on the website. The website is called musicvi.com. VI stands for visually impaired. The website is www.musicvi.com/index.html. I would give the website a screen reader friendliness rating of a 10. The website also has links to the National Library of Congress, NLS, where you can actually get some of these courses for free from them as well. For Blind Sights, I'm Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight. Blind Sight.
A gentleman you're familiar with, his name is Dale Campbell. He does our Cooking in the Dark show, has been a guest on Handyman several times, knows, when you get down to it, a lot about a lot of things, and did some roofing, sold appliances, knows a lot about them, worked on cars, knows lots of things, and learned in the last 10 years how to be, or how to even say the word, I am a blind person.
Right.
And there's nothing
blind
I can do about it.
Yeah, VIP, visually impaired and proud.
That's it.
But, yeah, and we have fun with that, you know? I mean, we have fun with that, Phil. You've got to have fun with your blindness.
I
go and I speak to the Lighthouse of Houston here. Sometimes I'll go back to their support group and hang out and just meet people because I know, I mean, that was one of the first things that I got into, and I was very blessed with great doctors, like we've mentioned, and a lot of support, a lot of people helping me out, trying to help me get on. But for me, until I was actually ready to do it,
yeah,
ready to move on, it didn't matter. You could talk till you were blue in the face, and until I made that decision that I was ready to go, it didn't matter. And I guess it was I had an old friend of mine, an old girlfriend, called me up and gave me the number for the Seeing Eye, you know, for the dog school up in Morristown.
Yeah.
And she goes, call him. I was like, all right, I'll call them. You know, I didn't have any intention on calling them. I was not ready to get out of bed. I was just laying in bed and feeling sorry for myself. And then about 15 minutes later, she called me back. Have you called them yet? I was like, no. She goes, well, call them. I'm going to call you back. I'm like, crap.
Leave me alone.
If anything that she could be a pain in the side, you know?
Or in the posterior.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to be polite.
And so she...
So I ended up calling the dog, you know, calling the Seeing Eye, and they sent me all the materials and the application, and I sent that back into them. And within about a month or so of them receiving that, they sent a trainer down to do what they call the Juno walk with me and basically find out why I wanted a dog and this, that, and the other. And so within a year, in fact, the anniversary of my wreck in 96, I was at the Seeing Eye in Morristown getting a guide dog. And for me, getting that freedom was the first step to me becoming who I am now.
It gave you much more independence.
Gave me my independence, yes. And that was the hardest thing for me, living in Houston, too. Mass transportation is not very good. I mean, you've got to be able to drive or have the ability to have your own transportation to get around in this city.
Oh, yeah.
And not being able to go out and hop in my truck and go where I needed to go when I needed to go, oh, it was killing me. Having to ask for a ride and then being on everybody else's schedule, it just drove me nuts.
Mm.
So getting that guide dog, it allowed me to go safely to the store and back, which out there the country store is about a mile away. So it's about a two-mile round-trip walk. And I could do it with a cane, and to everybody that's cane travelers out there, man, more power to you. No matter how you do it, if you use a guide dog, if you use a cane, if you use a friend, like right now I've either got Kelsey, you know, my guide dog, or I've got Candace, my beautiful blonde. So one of those two is, you know, that's who takes me places now. But no matter how you do it, get out. Get off the couch and get out and get into life.
Got to do it.
Because you are missing it. You're missing out on a lot. And the more of us that get out, the easier it's going to be for the next blind person.
Let me pay you a little compliment. You know, you're familiar with our friend Tom Houston that helps us with it. Tom says that out of all the dogs that were there at our thing, yours was the best behaved and the best looking dog there.
Fantastic.
The best groomed, the best. You handle your dog. You know, I'm not saying that any of the folks there, but some blind people kind of let their dog lay in the aisle or lay in people's way. Your Telsey was tucked under the table and where he should be, you know?
Yeah. I tell you what, he is, not only did he give me the confidence to start life, but he has had to deal with a lot. Because he had to deal with my newness to blindness. He had to deal with our newness together. And basically, I haven't stayed in one place long. I mean, I lived in Pearland for a little bit. I moved to San Antonio and lived out there for a few months. I've lived in Cincinnati a few months, went back to San Antonio, came back to Houston, moved back to Pearland. Then I've been over here in the Clear Lake area around the Space Center of Houston, I've lived in 5 different locations.
I didn't realize that.
So we have been bouncing around a lot, but he has never yet failed when I give him the command to go home to get me to the door. I mean, just a few weeks ago, in fact, when we went to buy groceries for the show, you know, that we did last, you know, for the handyman get-together, I got lost, basically. There was a sidewalk I wanted to turn on. I was trying to come back a new route to our new house that would save me a little bit of steps, and I missed it. I missed where to give him the command to turn because it was a new a new way that I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am out there, you know, I know where I'm at, but I don't know where I'm at. You know,
yeah.
I know I'm in the area, so I wasn't worried about that. So I just kept telling him, home, let's go home, find the house. And we walked and walked and walked, and I just trusted him. You know, you have to trust.
And eventually you realized, I'm home. You know, I know where I am.
Yeah, we got to a sidewalk to where I knew, I felt the declination of it, and I knew where we were at. And we were right there, I mean, we were 2 minutes from the house.
Yeah.
He walked. I mean, we were lost, and he got me there. I mean, I can tell now we can leave, and I can tell him, find the bank. You know, we're going to the bank. We're going to the grocery store. We're going to see Skylar, you know, my stepdaughter at the school. And he knows where we're going, and he's off. And if we start walking a different route or start to go a different way than what he's accustomed to, he will usually stop and look at me and say, you know, like, hey, are you sure you want to go this way?
You have to say, phooey, come on.
Yeah, I say, phooey, we're going a new way. Let's go a new way. And, man, a wag of the tail and away we go.
Have you?
If it's a new way, we're gone.
Have you taken the dog up to Skyler's school?
Yeah, many times.
I bet the kids love that.
The kids go crazy. In fact, so many kids and so many people around here know him. You know, they know Kelsey, but not me.
Yeah.
I'm just the guy that brings Kelsey
just
around.
Kelsey's leader.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah, we go in and play, oh, how's Kelsey today? Or we'll go in a Mexican restaurant here in the neighborhood, and before they bring us margaritas or water, they bring him a bowl of water. You know, a local bar down here by us, they have a water bowl in there for him. Now, I'm not saying that we go in there. I mean, I haven't been in there in probably 8 or 9 months, but we were in there last Saturday night listening to a live band, and a couple of the bartenders came up, how's your dog doing? Because I didn't have him with us. You know, real crowded places. If Candace is with me, I won't take Kelsey.
Sure.
Just for the fact that it's too crowded, and it's dark, and he's a chocolate lab, so there's a good chance he's going to get stepped on, kicked. I don't want to put him through that. You know, he doesn't deserve that.
Well, if you've got a sighted nice lady to lead you, there's just no point in, I mean, to kind of walk with or walk beside and put your hand on her shoulder or her arm or whatever. There's no point in taking the dog.
Not at all. Not in a situation like that. Now, one thing that I'm sure everybody has, I mean, going into a bathroom, that's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
But the way I conquer that, I just walk in and say, all right, blind guy coming through, and watch out. You might get your shoes peed on.
Well, you could stick with Candace, you could stick a fold-up cane in your back pocket.
Yeah.
You know, then you'd have one. I always try to, even though Luann's with me, I try to take one in case, you know.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually a couple of the places we go, I mean, after I've been there a few times, you kind of learn the lay of the land, so to speak. But, new bathrooms are sometimes kind of fun.
I've got lost in a number of them. Different times.
And it's not only that, it's finding the door to get back out sometimes. I know it's around here somewhere, man. Help me.
I was telling this story to the club that we go to. I used to play out there at Crown Colony. And there's one door that goes in the bathroom and one that comes out. But, like, hell, I didn't know that. I went in and did my business and you know, I was pounding, let me out. You know, how do you?
Right,
I couldn't figure out.
Figure out how to make it work, you know.
All part of being blind. Well, let's get from, you went through, obviously, casting about for things to do, San Antonio, Cincinnati, Dallas, Houston, wherever, trying to find yourself, trying to figure out, what am I going to do now?
Right.
You landed back in Houston, and you decided to start what you have now, the organization that you have now, your Blind Mice March, your scholarship, your thing that you're building on. How did all that start?
Out of frustration. You know, it really came out of frustration. I was frustrated at the high prices that we have to pay for adaptive equipment. I was just blown away by the insensitivity and the lack of assistance that we would get at local malls.
Uh-huh.
I went in and met with the mall managers of a mall local here. In fact, the one I worked at for 10 years. And luckily for me, I mean, by working there, I kind of knew, I mean, I know the layout of it and I know where stuff is, but I went in and made some suggestions to them on how they could make it a little more beneficial to blind shoppers. I lobbied for them to put in talking signs and audible signals. About the only thing that came out of all of that was the fact that I, now if I need to go shopping at the mall, I can call up their security manager. And he will have a security officer meet me at whatever door I tell them I'm coming into and basically escort me around the mall to do shopping. So, I mean, that's a big plus. But
well, yeah.
The biggest reason they said they weren't able to do a lot of the extra stuff was because there's not the need for it. And I know here in the Clear Lake area, I could rattle off the names of about 15 to 20 blind people just in this area.
But there's no need for it.
But there's no need for it. And the reason being is because a lot of visually impaired folks don't get out. They don't go in and raise the awareness in stores or in malls that we need assistance. You know, in San Antonio, I flat out was told that they would not escort me. They would not help me. And we started a legal battle with them. And once we filed charges, they relented and then, you know, started working with me to do the security guard thing there. I didn't run into that opposition here at Baybrook Mall, which is the mall I shop at here in Houston, you know, which is close to us.
Sure.
They were helpful. And, you know, I don't want to be, I understand. I mean, from a marketing standpoint, you know, why are we going to spend $20,000 or $30,000 to put in audible signs so one blind person can come in and shop every now and then?
Hmm. Yeah, that's true, but...
And then on the other side of the coin, by God, you've got signs up that identify the names of the stores for every sighted person that comes in here, so, you know, I deserve that right, too. So it's a catch-22, I guess. I mean, I being a marketing person and stuff, I can see both sides of the coin, but that's what kind of led me to this Blind Mice Mart. I found... I've been finding distributors that will drop ship merchandise for me, so I don't have to carry an inventory. The website that I've gotten developed is pretty good. I've had to do a lot of educating with the web developers to try to get them to be more understanding towards the needs of the visually impaired and screen readers and Zoom text and different things like that. And they're coming around. But I'm in a template design that I have to use in order to get on-time or real-time inventory control.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you're on the website and something's out of stock, it's going to tell you it's out of stock automatically. I don't have to run, a list of all the merchandise every day and then go in and manually take stuff that's not available out, you know, add stuff that comes up available in. I mean, basically when you order it from the website, if it says it's available, it'll be available.
Mm-hmm.
And the shipping will be sent.
Because that's your inventory setup right there on the website.
Yeah, that is our total inventory control right there. Now, I've gone out and found some adaptive products that we're finding different vendors for those to upload, and there's not a lot of adaptive stuff there. Because a lot of it, I want to use it and I want to test it and I want to make sure it meets my qualifications before I start saying, hey, buy this,
yeah,
you know, to everybody. Because that's my name I'm putting out there. You know, these kitchen grips that some people have bought, my goodness, they are fabulous. I mean, it's an oven mitt that is so thin that you can see when you have it on, basically for the blind. You know, I mean, you can tactually touch and feel what you're touching. I picked up a AA battery the other day with these mitts on, and I could tell you which end was the positive and the negative by feeling the...
Yet it keeps you from getting burned? I mean, yet it is...
It keeps you from getting burned.
Really?
It protects you up to 500 degrees.
Well, what a thing.
You know, it'll actually go from a negative 100 to 500. In fact, Don Shaw was the one that suggested, yeah, I use them for the freezer. And I'm like, you know, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
How many times have I been out there digging around in the chest freezer? You know, and pull your hands out and blow on them because they're cold. And I'm like, man, now I use the kitchen grips and it's on.
I use one hand and then I'll use the other one because I get one hand cold.
Yeah, bounce back and forth.
Yeah, you
but
got
with these kitchen grips on in the freezer, you can even identify what you're grabbing because they're so thin. They're fantastic. They're just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gloves. You know, like you put a cotton oven mitt on and you can't feel through it. You can't. I mean, you're really blind.
No, you really can't. I hate them. I don't use them. I use a towel for that reason, you know?
Exactly. And in a towel, you got to move quick or you're going to get burnt.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to get a little warm and uncomfortable. But, yeah, and these kitchen grip people are just, they're fantastic. They've worked with me. I told them why, you know, what we're doing and why we're selling them and who it benefits. And I've gotten nothing but just praise to give to them. They've been fantastic. The talking microwave that we recently found, talking scale that I'm hoping to hopefully close a deal on later today.
Have you ordered one of those for yourself? Have they sent you one?
The talking scale?
Yeah.
No, not yet. I will because I've just tracked their company down, and actually their home company is manufactured in England. And I thought, well, that's not going to work because shipping costs are going to be a little bit high. But I was able to track down a distributor here in the United States, and I just received an email from a representative of the company yesterday.
Now, is this the one that you tap on and it says hello?
Yeah, this is one that you tap on.
Okay.
You just tap on it with your foot. It has a 440-pound capacity.
And you tap on it with your foot. It says hello, and then it says, I'm ready.
Right.
You get on it, you weigh, and it tells you your weight, and then it says goodbye. And that's all
right.
That's
it turns off.
All right, I have one.
Just tap it.
I have one, sir. They're good.
Fantastic.
They're much more accurate than the one I had before. Just kind of weighed you. It got you within about 10 pounds of what you weighed.
Right.
This sucker here, you know, you weigh on it three times. You're within 0.2 pounds of what it started out as.
Wow, that is awesome.
So it's I'd recommend that.
I'm excited for that.
That's good.
That'll be good. That way, maybe Kelsey will get out of hot water because my wife always says he's fat. But as long as he stays under 100 pounds, we're good to go. He's just a big old boy. But anyway, getting back to, the Blind My Smart, and I've set it up to where if people are interested in selling the merchandise or just giving word of mouth, they can earn a little bit of money as well, because all the proceeds from the company goes into the scholarship fund. Basically, the operating cost, it costs about $1,000 a year to keep Blind Mice open between paying for the website, paying for the distributor, and, you know, the credit card gateway and such.
Sure, got to have that.
Some things we're looking at doing in the future down the road is to get Mousehole Scholarship set up as a nonprofit organization to where everybody can donate to it, not only just by through the sales from the company here, but other companies, other individuals as well. And, my biggest goal with the scholarship program is to offer every visually impaired kid that applies a scholarship. That's what I want to be able to do.
It would be nice.
Whether we get to that point or not, it'll just depend on everybody and the support we get. But, when I held that cane in my hand that was made for a toddler, Phil, it broke my heart. I just could not. I felt so lucky. At that one time, at that point, I quit feeling sorry for myself, for my predicament.
It took that to get you to quit feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah, that was what the catalyst was, because at that point I realized, man, I've been pretty lucky. I know how to do woodworking. I know how to, like you said, repair cars. I could still mow the yard if I had to. Hell, my rehab project, I built a 12 by 24 foot deck in my backyard around my pool. Put a lattice top on it, put a sun deck on top of that, wired it with electricity, put in a sprinkler system, put lighting in it, the whole nine yards, built stairs on it, built a ladder going up to the sun deck. And when I did it, I had no idea how I was going to do it. I built it in my mind, knew how I wanted it.
Yeah.
When I ordered the lumber, I told them how I wanted the lumber stacked because I knew what I would need first, and I wanted that on top and work my way through the stack. But I had no idea how I was going to do it. I mean, I guess I had an idea of how I would do it if I were sighted, but how am I going to do it blind? And, man, it was pretty great, and that was back before I had the talking tape measure. I mean, basically, I would use yardsticks or a piece of masonite board that was 8 feet long.
Yeah, that you knew was 8 feet long.
Yeah, and that's how I would do measurements. Or I knew this piece was 4 foot long, and I would do measurements off of that. Or if I had to cut it to a certain length, I used a small scrap of wood that I cut a kerf in down the edge of it that would fit onto that masonite. I would measure from the end to where I needed my cut to be, and I would push that piece of scrap down over the masonite to mark that distance. Carry that into the garage, use that to set up my saw, make my cut, and then take the piece back.
You learn these things when you're blind. You have to.
Yes. I mean, I remember walking out in the garage, and my table saw was totally covered, just piled up with crap. I took it all off, threw it all on the floor, and it took me 4 hours, but I built a birdhouse.
Just to see if you could. That was the first little thing that you did.
The first thing I built. And after I built it, I knew it was downhill from here.
All right, let's do a little wrap-up. Give us your website and how to get to merchandise from Blind Mice Mart.
The website is www.blindmicemart.com. Just basically click on the, go to the link and begin shopping.
If you
go in and register as a member, because all members, I go in and give everybody a little extra discount, and then the more you purchase, the bigger your discount will start to get. But on the website as well, there is a link for the Mousehole Scholarship Program. Currently, you can get on there and read about the scholarships from last year. You can read about the winners. And I still got to need to find that blind like me that we did with the winners and get that audio up there for everybody to listen to.
Call Shaw. He'll know exactly probably where it is.
Okay, great.
And if not, I've got to look through them to do some Christmas. I'll see if I can find it for
you. Yeah, I want to find those and put them up because the winners last year were just amazing kids. They were just awesome. And that just really made me even hungrier to give away more scholarships this year.
So you're wanting a copy of that?
On the website, too, there's a link for Cooking in the Dark, and that's got a lot of the cooking shows archived where, on demand, folks can just click on the what show it is, and it'll pull up the audio, and they can listen to you.
You keep sending me email, and I'll eventually find it for you.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right, we're going to go and thank you, sir. You've come a long way. I'm proud to call you my friend. You've done well.
You know, myself, meeting up with you guys was, that's just another jewel that I can put in my crown, I guess you can say, because you guys are fabulous, everything you do, and this last weekend just proves how awesome it is.
They're
how many people we touch.
They're working on me to do it again next year, and I guess I will. What the heck?
Twist that arm, right?
No reason
right
not
there
to.
With you, man.
Thank
we'll
you, sir.
Better.
Dale Campbell from Houston, Texas, thank you much. We're back with more Blind Like Me in just a sec.
You'll probably never need titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Don Patterson.
You know, as a proud member of the blind community for 60 years, sometimes I'm still surprised at the things that blind people will attempt and the things that blind people accomplish. And I ran across an interesting organization quite by accident, and it's called Ski for Light. And this is a nonprofit group that I think they even have some international acclaim. And they provide week-long outings for blind people whom they match up with, volunteer, but good skiers, and they go on week-long ski trips. Now, not to be confused with downhill skiing, this is Nordic or cross-country. It's really sort of like hiking on skis. Gravity, of course, take you downhill, but you got to get up the hill by yourself. I'm told that you don't need any prior ski knowledge, just kind of the willingness to do so. I don't think there's any physicals involved. Your body, you yourself are to know whether you're capable of it. I understand that on their next outing, I think, is in February in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And they say usually they have maybe 100 participants. Are 100 blind people and about 100 or so guides. It's all one-on-one. And then they also do a thing where they can accommodate 10 or so mobility impaired people. So it sounds quite interesting. I've never skied, never snow skied in my life, but I'm not saying it wouldn't be a bad deal. Keywords on this subject are ski for light. Go read about it on the internet. And that's this week's Look on the Blind Side. I'm Don Patterson.
On the Blind Side, answering questions nobody asks.
Anyway, we're doing the show off the show. Let's start.
Okay.
Here's a fellow that I never would have met if we hadn't started this little list. It's Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me stuff. Dan Rossi from New
Jersey. Pittsburgh
and Carnegie Mellon University. Good to have you, sir.
Thank you.
Friends I would not have made. There's so many of them that I just wouldn't know if we hadn't done all this. Your university, the university where you are employed, is involved in, just tell us about it, the steering of a car. Go ahead.
So, yeah, Carnegie Mellon University is big in robotics, and we've been messing around with autonomous navigation for more than 20 years. When I was a student here back in the 80s, we had NavLab, which was a big blue Chevy van that drove around campus and usually kind of crept along the local streets. And they've updated it continuously. I've had friends who worked at the Field Robotics Center who've worked on different autonomous navigation projects. Usually they're military-based because the DARPA is the one funding the money. So a lot of times they're looking for off-road navigation, which is much more difficult than on-road navigation. Some of the stuff that they've come up with so far, in 1995, there was two grad students from Carnegie Mellon drove a car from Pittsburgh to San Diego, California, with a computer basically doing all of the steering. The students handled the accelerator and the brake, but they racked up a total drive time percentage of autonomous navigation of 98.2%. So the car steered itself over 98% of the way from Pittsburgh to San Diego. And so that's pretty impressive.
Okay.
And now... Carnegie Mellon has just started putting together a consortium to basically raise a prize fund for the first team that can design and build a car capable of being operated by a totally blind driver. And, a lot of the key components are there. You know, the hands off across America, no hands across America, I guess it was. That proved that the steering capability is pretty much there. 98.2% is a lot. There's some fine detail they had to work on, but that was 9 years ago. You know, they've definitely improved since then, and there have been plenty of test drives of, you know, with the car under complete control of the computer, accelerator and brake. And they've been doing a lot of that with off-road stuff at Carnegie Mellon. They've done some on-road stuff, mostly on test tracks. But they're getting there. And I think, you know, a lot of people say it's impossible, but I actually believe it's it's a doable, a solvable problem, and it's not, you know, it's not 100 years off. It's
yeah.
within 10 years, I'd say. But I'm just pulling that out of nowhere. But from what I've seen and the people I know who work on the projects, I think people are pretty confident that it's definitely going to happen.
Now, the car that steered itself from Pittsburgh to San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
it has some function that knows where the white line is and knows to stay in that lane.
Yeah, the computer vision stuff basically looks, it uses GPS. That was a big part of it. GPS has definitely been a huge improvement to all of the autonomous navigation. I mean, back in the 80s, they didn't have anything like GPS. Well, nothing that we could use then anyway. But the computer vision looks at the road, at the road surface, looks at the white lines, looks at the edge of the road, and looks for other vehicles on the road, and processes all of this. They even said that in the journal for the No Hands Across America, they ran into some problem where they had they got onto a road surface that had just recently been paved and not all the white lines were painted in yet.
Hmm.
And so they kind of had to take over for a while. So these are all problems that, you know, a completely autonomous vehicle will have to deal with, you know, detours and accidents and, you know, so that's all the complexity.
Well, and then the rain fade, you know, the satellite, you lose it sometimes when it's really raining.
Yeah, well, and they did talk about losing the GPS, but the car wasn't using GPS to keep it on the road. It was using GPS to know where it was.
Yeah.
And the computer vision was keeping it on the road. So for short losses of GPS, that's not a major failure. You know, that's because the car will still stay on the road even without the GPS.
I think maybe in a small town setting, kind of like mine, like if I had a vehicle that I could get in and say grocery store,
mm-hmm.
and it would just, because you wouldn't have to get on any freeway to get to a grocery store from my house.
Right.
And I think that is just almost here.
Yeah. I think we're getting there. My personal viewpoint is that the easy part is driving on the roads, avoiding other cars, dealing with cars that are cutting you off and slowing down. Because, I mean, computers react to that stuff and can react to that stuff very quickly.
Yeah.
They'd be pretty good at staying on the road and avoiding other cars. The hard parts are going to be things like finding a parking spot, you know, or a legal parking spot. The car itself, the computer, would be pretty good at parking a car, parallel parking, because it could do that. It knows, you know, with sensors, it would know exactly how big the spot is and everything. But actually finding that spot and knowing that it's a legal parking spot, that's going to be one of the more complex issues they have to deal with.
Maybe we'll have some sort of ADA law that will say that every business has to have a parking spot for this computer car,
you
know, or something like that.
Right. I was thinking along those lines of, I think a parking lot wouldn't be too difficult to deal with because it's a very regular pattern and there's lines everywhere.
Yeah.
And even if you can imagine that, maybe they will radio frequency tag the handicapped parking spots.
Would be easy done. That technology's here.
Exactly. That technology exists, and the car can just zero in on that, and it can certainly identify whether there's a car parked there or not, and it can just pull right in.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we knew that.
Yeah, right.
Here's the deal. Now, you say the last test, that this driving across America, was done 9 years ago?
That was done 9 years ago. I mean, CMU has done a lot more since then, but that was like the last. That was a big test, you know. I mean, the algorithm for steering really proved itself, and you know, it's been modified and worked on. But putting all the pieces together, they're still working on that. Now, a lot of people will bring up a race that took place in the Nevada desert last year called It was all robotic vehicles. They had to drive, I think it was 140 miles across desert, part of it on road, part of it off road. The vehicles could not be interacted with at all by the teams.
Oh. So
basically, they were told to go. They knew where the endpoint was, and the vehicles were on their own. And it was a lot of the teams were garage-based guys just building stuff in their garage, and some were fielded by Carnegie Mellon and other universities.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that well. But that's a really difficult, a much different problem driving off-road than it is driving on-road. There's a lot of similar issues, but a lot of it is, roads, you have very detailed maps. Middle of a desert with big boulders and everything, you don't have maps of that stuff. That's all terrain avoidance kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
Well, it's an interesting thought, an interesting concept. Who'd have thought it 20 years ago, you know?
Exactly.
When I was growing up, can you, I guess you're totally blind now, and you're as interested in this stuff as we are, so maybe if you get any updates, you could kind of keep us apprised of what is going on in this thing.
I'll certainly do that. I'll be talking with some people who were part of the conference the last couple of days. I wasn't able to get a hold of them earlier, but they were part of the conference for this promotion of the Blind Driver Challenge. So I'll be talking with them and finding out just what was settled on and what was discussed at the conference.
Maybe you could coerce one of them into doing a little interview with me sometime.
I'll see what I can do.
Well, Daniel, thank you, sir, and carry on. And what did somebody ask on the list exactly? What do you do there? Somebody I saw on the list.
I'm
want to talk about
their computer geek.
You're their computer man, and that's pretty. I think a pretty neat thing for a totally blind person to you're so inciting people how to do stuff on computers, right?
Oh, I am. Yeah, it's not a bad job.
It's not a bad job. Dan Rossi from Carnegie Mellon University. Thank you, sir.
Hi, my name's Donna, and for the past 5 years, I've lived up here in the cold country, Rochester, Minnesota. I'd love to move
Love
to a warmer
is Blind,
place, but, you know,
the audio magazine
you know
for singles.
To find. Anyway, I'm around 32 years old, give or take a couple of years, and never been married. Oh, come close once or twice, but things just didn't work out.
If you'd like more information about this exciting new magazine, phone toll-free 1-877-222-0679. That's 1-877-222-0679. Or you can receive the same information as an email. Our address is loveisblind, all one word, at blindlikeme.com. That's loveisblind at blindlikeme.com.
Well, I think it's been decided that next week we're going to do two-hour cooking in the dark for Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. So join Dale Campbell and I for that. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week on Blind Handyman and this little show called Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye.